Issues, Etc. regular guest Pastor Jonathan Fisk is the author of our book of the month for February. It's titled Without Flesh. What does the church have to offer the world in this present darkness? Find out in Without Flesh. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Issues, Etc. book of the month for February, Without Flesh, by Pastor Jonathan Fisk. There's a very recent column in The Atlantic titled The Billion-Dollar Disinformation Campaign to Re-Elect the President by McKay Coppins. It is basically a maybe an expose, you could call, of what's in the social media world, what's going on in the social media world if you are in the stream of one of those pro-Trump tweets. It exposes a lot of things. Does it also expose some other things about the media that cover the president? Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about this recent Atlantic column on media and disinformation, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, If the Media Want to Stop Disinformation, They Need to Give People Reasons to Trust Them. Mark, welcome back.
Glad to be back again.
Generally, how do you explain the continuing and profound lack of self-reflection on the part of many in the media in the Trump era?
You know, that's a really good question. I think a lot of people are trying to figure that out right now. I mean, the bottom line here is that Trump got elected. The media was, you know, struggling as an industry, and all of a sudden there was a bit of a boomlet. And people took that, I think, as validation that what they were doing was fine. And while a small, you know, group of liberals engaging and spending more money on the media may be a slight blip that makes it look like the media is doing all right, the reality is, if you look at the bigger picture, you know, survey after survey after survey shows wide swaths of the American public, increasingly including liberals themselves, distrust the media, and this is creating a real problem long term. I mean, Trump is not going to be around forever, so the media won't have that to blame for why they don't have any trust built up anymore.
Tell us about McKay Coppins' Atlantic article on the media. What does Coppins get right about the media?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of good reporting in this call. I mean, just to clarify what the article is about, McKay Coppins is one of the top writers at The Atlantic, and he writes an 8,000-word profile on the Trump campaign's digital operations coming into re-election. You know, it didn't get a lot of attention at the time, but, you know, one of the reasons why the Trump campaign won in 2016, despite being heavily outspent by Hillary Clinton, was that a remarkably effective digital campaign. They did a very good job of utilizing Facebook ads and targeting their voters and getting them out to the polls. So, you know, now, second time around, those people who pay attention to this sort of stuff in D.C. know that this campaign is effective and are already paying attention to it. McKay Coppins' particular spin on this, however, was that I think the headline was something about the Trump campaign's billion-dollar disinformation operation. And, you know, I mean, to be fair, I mean, a billion-dollar disinformation operation, you know, could describe any presidential campaign in the 21st century. But Coppins approaches this from the standpoint, I think, a lot of reporters who try and deal with Trump and his sort of, you know, hyperbole and brash rhetorical style, which is to present this as if it's some sort of, you know, dramatic threat to democracy itself, when I'm not quite sure that Trump's voters, even if they admit that Trump has a strained relationship with the truth sometimes or a lot of the time, quite see it that way.
How does Coppins define disinformation?
Well, this is the thing. He doesn't actually really come out and say what is quote-unquote disinformation, you know, relative to what the information the Trump campaign is putting out. I think he, like a lot of people in the mainstream media, basically assumes that there's this baseline of truth that embodies the media consensus, which itself reflects sort of a narrow, coastal, well-educated overclass in this country, and that is the truth. But the reality is the problem, we have a lot of problems in the media, in part because they're telling a very sort of specific segment of the population, which is, you know, like I said, center-left, well-educated, you know, lives on the coast, what they want to hear as opposed to what the truth is. And we see this regularly, you know, if, you know, among Trump supporters and people that, you know, live in rural areas and things like that. I mean, there are particular topics, you know, like religion, guns, that are just routinely, I mean, just brutally wrong in ways that you'd think would embarrass the media establishment, but they seem to have, like, no interest whatsoever in getting up to speed on these issues and talking about these issues in a way that people who actually care about these issues would consider fair. And then, aside from the general ignorance on, you know, major topics of importance to, you know, large parts of the country, then on top of that, you pile the basic partisan double standards that you get because the media is, you know, there's no other really way to say it, which is to say, unintentionally or intentionally, they're putting their thumb on the scale for Democrats in just about any election. So, you know, this is causing, has been for some time causing profound frustration among much of the country. And even now, I think it's seeping into Democratic voters. You know, you see the way that Bernie Sanders voters are reacting to the mainstream media now, given that they feel that the Democratic establishment has, and that is very much in tight with the media, are trying to suppress their campaign. And you're seeing more and more of that even on the left, I think.
Coppins adopted a Facebook profile and followed a lot of the pro-Trump feeds on that social media platform. What did Coppins discover?
Well, he writes at length or whatever, sort of flowery about, like, how disorienting it was. And, you know, even though he thought he was media literate, you know, all this, you know, disinformation and untruths coming at him had him really, you know, questioning things. Like, this is, you know, he subjected himself to some sort of grand psychology experiment. You know, and my reaction to that, again, you know, as we've established, there are major issues in this country, like really big, important, substantive issues that the media just regularly gets so wrong that it's laughable to, you know, anyone who, say, you know, is a weekly churchgoer or, you know, owns firearms or, you know, whatever the issue is. So, for so long, the media system in this country has been entirely asymmetric. You know, if I'm conservative or lean right or, you know, religious or anything like that, if I want to know what the left thinks, all I got to do is turn on the TV for 5 seconds. You know, if liberal reporters want to know what people who lean conservative or vote Republican think, or, you know, what people that attend church think, they have to make tremendous effort to try and figure out what their worldview is because they seem to have no clue, and it shows up in their reporting. So it's this sort of, like, weird, you know, hypocrisy. It's like, you know, they claim they're looking at conservative worldviews, you know, through some sort of funhouse mirror, when the reality is like, that's how people on the right deal and interact with the media on a daily basis.
You quote blogger Ala Pundit, quote, "American politics increasingly feels like a novel whose events are retold by two unreliable narrators, Trump being one and the media being the other. The truth, or something close to it, is in there somewhere between the two of them." What is he saying?
Well, I think he's saying that, and I think this is actually a really good framework for sort of understanding what's going on here. The reality is that much of the angst on the left right now is they seem to be, like, tearing their hair out again over this idea that, you know, here is this huckster, here is this mountebank who's president, you know, who's saying things that aren't true, and how do people not see this? Well, the reality is that the calculus here is much more complicated. Again, like I said, if you're on the right, you regularly feel like you've been lied to by the media, and with good reason frequently, and this was going on for years, if not decades, before Trump ever arrived on the scene. You know, Trump, you know, stirring up hostility at the media that worked as a political tactic because he was capitalizing on pre-existing anger at the media among much of the country. And the media seems to be in complete denial about this. It's like everything was hunky-dory, and then, you know, Trump descends this gold escalator in 2015 and announces he's running for president, and all, you know, everything goes haywire. And that's just the wrong way to look at it. The reality is that for a long time, people in this country felt that they couldn't trust much of the official information coming out of the media as far as electoral politics and various important topics to them were concerned, and they felt that they were being misinformed, if not actively deceived and misled in some instances. So they felt that way for a long time, and now the left suddenly has a situation here where they feel like much of the country is being misled, including themselves, and so everybody's unhappy with sort of the information system in this country. And there's plenty of blame to go around, but the fact of the matter is, I think for a lot of people, that, you know, like I said, there were these problems with the media decades before Trump came along, and, you know, maybe in as soon as, you know, less than a year from now, Trump will be out of office, or maybe it'll be 4 years after that. But the reality is Trump's not going to be around to kick around forever, and the fear, especially on the right, is that we'll still be stuck with this entirely corrupt media institutions, so they don't mind the fact that we have a president who highlights all of this, you know, even to the point of hostility directed at the media. You know, this terrifies the media, but for right now, this Trump is sort of the defense that a lot of voters in this country think they have from a hostile media that would destroy their way of life if given a chance.
We're talking about a recent Atlantic column on the media and disinformation. Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, If the Media Want to Stop Disinformation, They Need to Give People Reasons to Trust Them. You can meet Mark and his wife, Molly Hemingway, at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. We're already more than half full. Early bird registration before April 1st is $135 and includes three meals. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385, the 2020 Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th in Chicago. On the other side of the break, Coppins has an example of disinformation that, if you pay attention, backfires a little bit. Stay tuned.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $135 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make a $135 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ, teaches St. Paul. But what about those who cannot hear? Can they be saved? The February issue of the Lutheran Witness illuminates this topic and others, including hearing the gospel while singing the faith, how to listen to sermons, and proclaiming the gospel in foreign lands. Come, learn how the church confesses the word in words. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/witness.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations about a recent Atlantic column on media and disinformation. Mark, Coppin cites a comment made by President Trump at a rally accusing Virginia Governor Ralph Northam of executing a baby, obviously a false claim. How does Coppins deal with that comment?
Well, you know, he cites this as an example of like just this crazy, egregious thing that Trump says. Trump said that the governor of Virginia, you know, killed a baby. And yeah, I mean, what Trump said was absolutely wrong. The governor of Virginia did not execute a baby, and we need to be absolutely clear on that. But, you know, the problem is this is like a classic example of why, you know, what seems like a clear fact in the media's, from the media's perspective about, you know, something awful that Trump said or is misleading people about actually isn't so simple for people that are paying attention to this sort of stuff. In fact, it's a great example of how the media are entirely hostile to their particular political viewpoint and or values. So, you know, as you might recall, we probably discussed it on the show before, and your regular listeners will know about it. Last year, the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, who is a pediatrician, talked about infants being born alive as a result of botched abortions and basically said that leaving them to die was a, you know, an option that people could accept, like this is a perfectly normal and moral thing to do. Okay, so even if Trump greatly exaggerating, you know, even slanderously so, saying that he killed a baby, Northam did basically, you know, publicly endorse letting babies die. And like then that led to this whole crazy chain of events where one of Northam's classmates in medical school is so incensed by his remarks that he leaked to the media a photo from a yearbook of a man in blackface standing next to a man in a Klan uniform, and Northam was allegedly in the photo. Northam apologized for the photo and then backtracked for apologizing for the photo and says he didn't know that he was in the photo, but then did admit to wearing blackface later. And then we come to find out that the guy that's supposed to replace Northam after everyone is calling on Northam to resign as a result of this scandal, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax of Virginia, he has been credibly accused of sexual assault by two different women, and the Washington Post has been sitting on the charges. I don't need to go into details about the charges, but the thing about it that angers a lot of conservatives is that the Washington Post issues a statement about how they didn't publish any of the charges against Justin Fairfax because they couldn't substantiate the charges, never mind that the substantiation for the charges against the lieutenant governor are about, like, 10 times stronger than the information they had when they went to press with accusations against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh just a few months earlier, where the accuser named three witnesses who were there at the alleged sexual assault, none of which corroborated her version of events. There's no proof that the two have ever even met or been in the same room, whereas Justin Fairfax is saying these are, that the encounters were consensual at least. I mean, just on and on and on. I mean, if you're paying attention to this, the hypocrisy of this is just, you know, beyond belief. And then we get into a third case here where the person third in line for secession of the governor is Mark Herring, who's the state attorney general, who he himself now admits that he once wore blackface. And then everybody realizes the fourth in line to become governor, should all three of these people resign for their egregious misconduct, is the Republican Speaker of the House. So the media all shuts up and no one says anything about it. The end of the result of all this is that all three men are still in office. And last December, the Washington Post wrote an editorial praising Governor Ralph Northam for his, you know, great political comeback. I mean, if you are a conservative voter, you see how the media treats massive political scandals with, like, these brazen double standards. And you look at that in the context of McKay Coppin saying, how dare, you know, Trump exaggerate about what Ralph Northam said about, you know, letting babies die. I mean, if you know all the facts involved in that, are you really that incensed about Trump's exaggeration about what Ralph Northam did? I mean, at some point you have to pick and choose between basically Trump and his, you know, crazy hyperbole and exaggerations and schoolyard insults, or a media that is incredibly hostile and unfair. And you cannot be surprised in those circumstances when a lot of people decide that Trump is the lesser of evils.
Why is it also important to note that President Trump gets called out by the media every single day many, many times on his exaggerations, his outright falsehoods, or even the character issues?
Well, yeah, and then this is the other thing, too, which is, you know, Trump, for all his bluster and all of the crazy things that he says, you know, almost any time he says anything outlandish, the media is all over it. I mean, there are fact checks out the wazoo. The Washington Post is keeping a running tally of some 16,000 false or misleading claims that Trump has supposedly uttered, you know, according to them. You get these 8,000-word think pieces in The Atlantic wondering what we should all do about Trump's dishonesty. I mean, there's no shortage of effort on behalf of the media to try and hold Trump accountable for, you know, supposedly not telling the truth. The problem here is that I think that very often, as bad as things might be in a Trump administration where they're stretching the truth, often it seems like the opposite can frequently be much more dangerous. I mean, as we saw in the Obama years many times, there were very dramatic, consequential instances of dishonesty that didn't really get dealt with because the media was entirely predisposed to support Obama and his, you know, re-election campaign and his presidency in general. The example I used in the article that I wrote was Obama went out when he was running for re-election in 2012 talking about Obamacare, you know, and he told people not to worry about Obamacare. He said, if you like your current health insurance coverage, you get to keep your current health insurance coverage under Obamacare. Now, anyone who knew the first thing about how that bill worked knew this was, you know, dramatically not true. I mean, this was a brazen lie. He told it something like 37 times. It was an argument that was central to his reelection effort. And there were six different fact checks by PolitiFact, the fact-checking organization, saying that Obama's statement was essentially correct under Obamacare, that you would get to keep your insurance. Well, guess what? The way they wrote the bill, and they deliberately wrote the bill this way, I might add, to be deceptive, which is to say that the portion of the bill that causes people to lose their health insurance didn't go into effect until after, you know, Obama was reelected in 2012. Obama gets reelected, the bill goes into effect, somewhere between 5 and 10 million Americans lose their health insurance because of this. And then what happens in 2013, PolitiFact makes, if you like your health care insurance, you can keep your health care insurance, the lie of the year, even though they had previously said it was true six different times. You know, and this is a fact-checking organization. And the reason, but at that point, it didn't matter that they'd called it lie of the year, because the whole point of the lie was to get Obama reelected. You know, would Obama have been reelected if 10 million Americans had known that they were going to lose their health insurance? Well, I guess we'll never know. But you see this again and again and again in the previous administration. And I would just also point out that, you know, Trump, for all of his bluster and the things that he says that are untrue, you know, a lot of these things are sort of very petty and vainglorious insults and stuff that come out of his mouth. As far as I can tell, you know, I mean, I'm open to arguments otherwise, but I mean, has Trump told a single lie that was as consequential to, you know, say 10 million Americans, you know, that would cause them to lose their health insurance or something along those lines? I'm not sure he has. You know, it's not to say that Trump gets excused for stretching the truth, but, you know, we have to look at this in perspective. And more than that, the media needs to understand that voters aren't dumb. They saw what happened in the Obama administration with this cozy relationship with the press. You even had members of the Obama administration bragging about manipulating the press on his foreign policy Iran deal stuff. People saw that happen, and, you know, now they look at the hostile, you know, relationship between the press and Trump, and again, they have to weigh these things against each other, like which environment best suits their interests. You know, in some ways, having a press that's completely hostile to those in power is a much better arrangement than having a press that are, you know, lapdogs, which is what we saw in the Obama years.
So Coppins thinks that time is running out for the media to reform themselves. He's hearing voices of people who just want to burn the whole thing down. How do you respond to those who say, look, we just got to burn it to the ground?
Well, honestly, at this point in time, it's hard not to sympathize in some ways because, you know, again and again and again, and if this is Coppins' article to some extent, like, you know, the media is either completely oblivious or just openly hostile to people that have political and religious viewpoints and cultural viewpoints that they don't like. And I just, you know, this has been going on for decades. At some point, they had to be aware that this is going to reach some sort of, like, boiling point, and there would be consequences for that kind of abusing their credibility and public trust. I mean, so I totally understand where those people are coming from, the people that want to sort of burn it all down, and, you know, it's frankly even hard not to sympathize in lots of instances. On the other hand, there are certain things about the media and the way that American democracy functions that are, you know, where the media is really, really important. It would be nice to have a media that was able to sort of impartially report on important political disputes and important political issues and get the facts right. And, you know, even setting aside that, you know, as much as you may hate the op-ed page of the New York Times, you know, for being liberal or not reflecting, you know, making arguments that you think are hostile to your way of life, the fact of the matter is you're not going to get your reporting on, say, a deadly pandemic that's breaking out in the Wuhan province in China from some random, you know, Trump-supportive political blog. You do need big news organizations out there doing important, you know, news gathering. So we have to be, you know, careful about starting a war between people that are opposed to the press and the press itself.
So finally, do the media have the obligation to help democracy function? And if so, what should they be doing?
I mean, I think they do. Obviously, you know, if you go back to the founding of America, you know, a lot of the founding fathers are very clear on the role of the press in this, and there's a reason why we have a First Amendment. I think that they need to, you know, step back and, you know, return to first principles. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, highfalutin rhetoric that gets thrown around in the media that, you know, if these people took these words to heart, you know, about, you know, being fair, you know, about, you know, making sure that those in power aren't abusing, you know, ordinary citizens, and all of the sort of stuff that you learned about the press growing up in civics class, I mean, all that stuff is still roughly true. The problem is the media can't separate those things, those higher values of fairness and looking out for the little guy from their own self-interest anymore. And I think they really need to just sort of like step back and, you know, return to first principles. And the other thing, frankly, I think they need to do is they need to actually embrace real diversity in the news industry. I mean, they need, I've worked in lots of mainstream newsrooms, you know, I worked at wire services and daily newspapers and things like that. And all of the cliches about, you know, who journalists are these days is like completely true. These are people that often, you know, they're not weekly churchgoers, they're not firearm owners. If they did come from the Midwest or something, you know, or a rural part of the country originally, they now are like firmly ensconced in this, you know, coastal elite culture. All of these newsrooms that are reporting on nationwide news are concentrated on the East Coast. You know, they've got to just sort of branch out and, you know, more accurately reflect the arguments and lives of the diversity of Americans, both in terms of both their political, religious, and cultural practices, and they're just simply not doing that.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for Real Clear Investigations and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, If the Media Want to Stop Disinformation, They Need to Give People Reasons to Trust Them. You can read his columns on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Follow him on Twitter at Heminator, that's at HEMINATOR. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
In hour two of Issues Etc. on this Monday, February the 10th, our series Introducing the Books of the Bible continues. We are in Paul's epistles, working our way through the smaller ones. We will come to Colossians with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Colossians rides along with a couple other of Paul's letters, and it has a lot of affinity for at least two others. It's obviously the same author. What the total message of this short book is, and how it focuses our hearts and minds entirely upon Jesus. We'll answer that question next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilken and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.